This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, your host. I am weighing in, as I do every week, usually on a Friday. These podcasts are uploaded to drhoffman.com. I am weighing in. I am taking your questions, talking about topics of interest. The way to reach me with your questions or topics of interest, radioprogram@aol.com. That email is radioprogram@aol.com. I hope you've had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope you've eaten well, that you were nourished, that you were with loved ones, your family, your friends, and that you were thankful for the good things in your life. It's great to operate from abundance, and it's great to have a delicious meal. Here we are in December. That's one holiday down. Couple more to go for most of us, right? So taking your questions at radioprogram@aol.com, and I've got one here from Annie. Annie writes, "Dear Layla, do you have any thoughts on the recent study that seems to indicate low triglycerides as a hemorrhagic stroke risk factor in women? This might be of interest to your female listeners and readers." Annie, thank you so much for sending me this. And she sent me a citation of this article, which, by the way, I was not able to gain access to, but the citation offers enough information here. And it was in the journal Neurology, and it's low LDL triglycerides increase stroke risk in women. Think about that, low LDL. What do all cardiologists want you to have? A low LDL. Low LDL triglycerides increase stroke risk in women. What they found, women with LDL levels below 70 and low triglyceride levels, they don't say how low, they don't give us a number. They give us a number for the LDL, which is below 70, had increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke, according to the study published in Neurology. So hemorrhagic stroke, first of all, let's talk about stroke in general. The stroke that happens most frequently is an ischemic stroke. That's an MI, a brain infarct, a clot in the brain, ischemic stroke. They are talking in this study about a hemorrhagic stroke, and about 13% of strokes are hemorrhagic. 13% of strokes happen when a blood vessel ruptures in or near the brain. It's a hemorrhagic stroke. When this type of stroke happens, blood collects in the brain tissue. It's a hemorrhage, right? You're bleeding. This is toxic for the brain tissue, causing the cells in that area to weaken and die. So this type of stroke found in this study, associated with low LDL, below 70, and low triglycerides, an unspecified number, because I was not able to access the article. This type of stroke is only 13% of strokes. Most of them are ischemic strokes, a blood clot to the brain. Some of them are TIAs, mini strokes, they're also called. This is a hemorrhagic one, which is about 30% of strokes altogether. So are all hemorrhagic strokes the same? There are two kinds of hemorrhagic stroke. And in both, a blood vessel ruptures, disrupting blood flow to part of the brain. An intracerebral hemorrhage, which is the most common type of hemorrhagic stroke, occurs when a blood vessel bleeds or ruptures into the tissue deep within the vein, the brain. These are most often caused by chronically high blood pressure or aging blood vessels. They are sometimes caused by an arterial venous malformation. AVM is the acronym for arterial venous malformation. An AVM is a cluster of abnormally formed blood vessels. Any one of these vessels can rupture, also causing bleeding into the brain. So these are the types of intracerebral hemorrhages. The other type of hemorrhagic stroke is a subarachnoid hemorrhage. And this occurs when an aneurysm on or near the surface of the brain ruptures and bleeds into the space between the brain and the skull. An aneurysm is a blood-filled pouch that balloons out from an artery. These are often caused by high blood pressure. In addition to high blood pressure, factors that increase the risk of hemorrhagic strokes include cigarette smoking, use of oral contraceptives, particularly those with high estrogen content, excessive alcohol intake, and use of illegal drugs. Alcohol raises blood pressure, number one. Number two, thins the blood. You may think, oh, thinning the blood is a good thing, and that's why the Mediterranean diet, glass of red wine, excessive alcohol intake is a problem. Really thins the blood, really raises blood pressure, and can cause a bleed. So, hemorrhagic stroke. And this is one of the types of stroke. It's only 13% of the strokes. But coming back to the study in neurology, and thank you, Annie, for sending this to me. They're finding an association with LDL levels below 70 and low triglycerides had increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke. Strategies to lower cholesterol and triglyceride levels, like modifying diet or taking statins, are widely used to prevent cardiovascular disease. But this large study shows that in women, and this is specifically about women, very low levels may also carry some risks, according to an assistant professor at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School, Pamela Rist. Women already have a high risk of stroke than men, in part because they live longer. So clearly defining ways to reduce their risk is important. Researchers analyze data from nearly 28,000 patients from the Women's Health Study, a very large study that's been going on for a few decades. Blood samples were taken to measure LDL, HDL, total cholesterol, and triglycerides. And then the women were categorized by LDL levels of less than 70. And then the next category is LDL between 70 and 99.9. The next quartile up is from 100 to 129.9. And then the next quartile being between 130 and 159.9. And finally, at levels around 160 LDL. Questionnaires were completed annually to collect information on outcomes, including stroke. So they followed up on these women, right, for about 19.3 years. There were 137 incident hemorrhagic strokes during this follow-up. Compared with women with LDL levels between 100 and 129.9, those with levels less than 70 had a 2.17 times the risk for a hemorrhagic stroke after a multivariable adjustment. Women with LDL levels greater than 160 had an elevated risk for hemorrhagic stroke, although it was not statistically significant. An increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke was not seen in women with LDL levels between 70 and 100 or between 130 and 160. Very interesting. Now think about it. Your cardiologist wants your LDL less, not just less than 100, but less than 70. This may be a problem for women. And what I'm getting in the citation is they're giving us the number of less than 70 for LDL. But what they say about low triglyceride levels here is a significantly increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke was seen in women in the lowest quartile of triglycerides versus those in the top quartile after multivariable adjustment. No significant associations were observed between total cholesterol or HDL and the risk of hemorrhagic stroke. So what does this mean? We don't have a number for what low triglycerides from this citation, and I don't have access to the article. So if anybody out there can get me this article so I could take a deeper dive into it, but this is all very interesting. And think about it. When you have high triglycerides, that is fat. Triglyceride is fat, and it's circulating in your blood. So somebody with high triglycerides, what might their blood look like? It might resemble a milkshake. When you go for a blood draw, that blood may come out more slowly into that needle, into that test tube, right? And those with low triglycerides, that blood really shoots out into that blood draw, into that test tube. That blood is thinner. And of course, a thinner blood can or may increase risk of bleeding out, including a hemorrhagic stroke. But I want to remind everybody, and Annie, thank you again for sending this to me, that of all strokes, hemorrhagic stroke is only 13% of all strokes. So for anybody now wondering, oh no, my LDL is too low, my triglycerides are too low. No, having lower triglycerides is a good thing with regard to clot formation and all of that. And I was never a fan of having to lower cholesterol levels to below 70. That's quite a lot. You know, when you see an LDL cholesterol below 70, and then you see an HDL of 50, and you've got a total cholesterol of 130, that's awfully low. And in my opinion, I've never thought that that was very healthy. Remember, cholesterol is a necessary substance. We need it. A total cholesterol of less than 160 may be a risk factor for cancer, according to the Framingham Heart Study. These are all things that merit a closer look with more scrutiny, certainly. But this is very, very interesting, this article in Neurology about low LDL triglycerides increased stroke risk in women. I would really be fascinated to know what they consider low triglycerides. Do they mean under 150? Do they mean under 100? Do they mean under 50 even? And that's awfully low. We rarely see that unless you're in ketosis for a long time. We normally consider that a good thing, but we may have to rethink this. Again, I don't have that number. And Annie, thank you for sending me this. And for those of you who have any information, can contact me at radioprogram@AOL.com, or any of your questions or concerns, send it to radioprogram@AOL.com. I have another question here from June. June writes, in Layla's article on apple cider vinegar, you stated long-term excessive use would affect potassium levels. So how much should you take and how often as to not be too much? And for those of you who haven't read the article, let me just go through this article that I wrote recently in the Intelligent Medicine newsletter about the benefits of apple cider vinegar. And for those of you who would like to subscribe to the newsletter, you go to drhoffman.com. And on the upper right hand there, you will see you can click to subscribe. Just enter your email. The newsletter is free. It comes out around every Thursday. And you can unsubscribe at any time. We don't use your email for any other reason. So, besides being a favorite go-to dressing for salads and coleslaw, apple cider vinegar has many good uses for health. For example, vinegar can help blunt the blood sugar response, making it beneficial for diabetics. Apple cider vinegar also contains beneficial polyphenols like chlorogenic acid, which can help inhibit the oxidation of LDL cholesterol. The fermentation process leaves apple cider vinegar rich with antioxidants like catechin, epicatechin, caffeic acid, and gallic acid, in addition to acetic acid, which confers antimicrobial benefits. Apple cider vinegar is also alkalinizing in the body, yes, even though it's an acid. And for your information, lemon juice is also alkalinizing despite its acidity. Having a proper dietary acid alkaline balance is good for bone health, which your body very tightly controls. However, long-term excessive use of apple cider vinegar can lower potassium, which can compromise muscle and bone health. For June, I would say you don't want to use more than a standard amount of vinegar that you would use in a salad dressing. I wouldn't go past 2 tablespoons a day. Right? For those of you who use it in your salad or your coleslaw, I wouldn't use more than 2 tablespoons a day. And maybe you want to alternate, if you're a big fan of apple cider vinegar, you want to alternate with lemon juice if you feel like you're using it too much. But what would really tell if your potassium levels are too low? Your basic metabolic panel blood test that your doctor gives you at your annual physical. Or ladies, maybe when you go for your annual, your GYN visit, if they're giving you a metabolic panel, potassium is one of the things they look at. So if you're an avid user or a frequent user of apple cider vinegar, you could check your yearly physical metabolic panel and see if your potassium is a little bit on the low side. You may want to kind of use less of it. That would be the thing. You know, too much of a good thing, you know, too many green apples or too many apples are going to give you stomach ache, right? So use moderation. Apple cider vinegar is also good, as are the other salad vinegars too. They tend to increase satiety with your meal. So you tend to eat less when you're starting, say, with your salad that's been seasoned with some vinegar. And it may promote more satiety. You will find that you will eat less of your dinner. It's helpful for those trying to take in less food, trying to lose weight. And it's the level of acetic acid in the vinegar that's associated with the effect of promoting satiety. And another thing, those of you who have acid reflux, heartburn, GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, acid reflux is generally due to inadequate amounts of stomach acid as opposed to too much acid. Taking a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in a tall glass of water daily can aid digestion and prevent reflux from happening. Now, this is just a tablespoon. This should be okay for most people. Constipation can also be alleviated with apple cider vinegar. And I know many people tell me that they no longer have constipation as long as they take about a tablespoon, some people even less, in some water. It stimulates digestive juices that aid in healthy digestion, and it can help normalize bowel function. So when you purchase your apple cider vinegar, don't choose distilled vinegar. Look for the murkiness in it. One of my favorite apple cider vinegar brands is Bragg's. I like Bragg's. It's got the murkiness. It's got the mother. You want organic, unfiltered vinegar with the likeness of cobwebs floating around in it. It's murky. This is known as the mother, which is comprised of acetic acid bacteria and yeast, which can help populate your intestinal microbiota with more of the same. Okay. Warning to people with candida overgrowth. Vinegar is not indicated for those with a yeast overgrowth. You want to move over to lemon juice or lime juice in your salad dressing, along with your extra virgin olive oil, right? You don't necessarily want to do a vinegar, including apple cider vinegar. So, June, I hope this answers your question about how much. Less than 2 tablespoons a day is fine. A tablespoon a day would be fine, I would imagine, for most people. If you're concerned, next time you see your primary care and you get your standard blood test, they'll see if your potassium level is too low. And that would be then something worth investigating, but I doubt this would happen from a very moderate use of apple cider vinegar, which most of us enjoy in a salad or a coleslaw. Thank you for your questions today. Email me to radioprogram@AOL.com if you want to send any more questions. Thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.